Hey everyone, it's Henry, Mike, and Chris of the Decentralists. It's time for another hot topic, and it's been a busy week. There's something that I know they want to talk about called Brave. I'm not an expert, but Mike, why don't you start us off?
Well, Henry, thanks for the warm intro. Yeah, we've got another hot topic this week. You know, back on the 8th of June, Shoshana Wodinsky from Gizmodo broke it to a topic on the Brave browser blowing up their whole reason for existence. And I know that Chris and I have talked about this one because it was actually very, very, kind of ironic, the article itself. But Chris, I know you've got a lot to say about Brave. So why don't you give us the intro and tell us what we can expect with the Brave browser?
Okay, so the first thing you need to know about Brave is it's not just a regular old web browser. Okay, this web browser is meant to be the ultimate in privacy. Okay. It was founded by Brandon Eich. If you don't know who that was, he was a former CEO of Mozilla, and he is the fellow who created JavaScript. Huh. Okay. Which is, yeah, a pretty big deal. It's one of the primary languages that
we're doing. somebody who knows what he's doing.
He absolutely knows what he's doing. So, not only was Brave meant to be the ultimate in private web browsing, right? But they were offering all of this stuff for free. Okay. And not just for free, but if you surf for a certain amount of time, go into their revenue sharing program, well, you know, Brave was supposed to pay you for web browsing.
Wow. Okay.
So what could go wrong?
Oh, man. I'm betting a few things.
All right. What are you betting, Mike?
Well, I mean, I think part of the problem is, right, is what we've seen in this article by Wodinsky is the fact that, a lot of these private browsers, I mean, Mozilla has them with Firefox, right? You've even got little private buttons on Safari and on Chrome, and you know, but Brave was one that was built with the intention of providing a private browsing experience. You know, coming from these pure backgrounds of open source and all of these types of things, you expect these tools to deliver what they say. Especially when they're supported by an open source community that's there to keep the developers honest. And what I found interesting about what was reviewed this week is it turns out that Brave has been less than honest with its users.
That's absolutely true. So whenever it comes to a piece of software, you always have to ask yourself, well, how do they make money? Because if their need to make money compromises their reason for existing, then you have a problem.
Right.
Okay. So Brave was, or it still is, it's a free web browser. So they have to make money somehow. Right. And the way that they said they were going to make money was through something fairly convoluted called a basic attention token.
Okay.
Right. Which is, I'm not going to get into the details here because it is convoluted, but basically the amount of attention you give to the Brave web browser that, you know, that was supposed to turn into money. And then through the magic of blockchain and other hocus pocus, you know, users of Brave were supposed to get paid.
Do you mean, Chris, that this browser could see or monitor what you're watching, then go to that product or service and get money from them and then eventually pay you? Is that what you meant?
Yeah. Yes. And Henry, now you're seeing kind of the problem here, right? Which is,
it's complex.
It not only is it complex, but there's
not private.
There's a contradiction. There's a contradiction here, which is if you're supposed to be the ultimate in privacy. Okay. And yet it's monetizing attention.
Exactly.
Well, whose attention are you monetizing and how do you find out?
Without monitoring them, without tracking them.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So that has to be convoluted. There has to be something kind of, there has to be a special sauce to make that happen. And finally, you know, kind of looking at this through a skeptical eye, we have to ask ourselves, well, who's funding Brave? Okay. And where are the reasons?
Right.
And by the way, when you talk about funding, it should be obvious to everyone, but anything has to be funded because you've got these workers who have to create it, who actually have to write it, put it out there, host it, that sort of thing. Nobody does it for free. So that's the essence of funding, mm-hmm. because nobody can afford to live and work for free.
Absolutely.
Well, and I mean, like, you know, just to, you know, let's take that a little bit further, though, Henry. I mean, what you have is a lot of these things like Brave and other, applications like this, they come from what is typically an open source background. Okay. And the kind of the challenge with open source itself, if it's pure open source, which Brave may not be, but at the end of the day, when it's an open source project, what you typically have is you have, you know, a bunch of really smart people who get together and they build a tool for people to use for free. Okay. And the downside of that is it's usually like a pet project. Right. It's a couple of people or four or five people who just get together and they build something, but they don't necessarily support it. Right. They don't necessarily have manuals right. or user guides.
It's
or
a good
things.
Idea.
So it never usually makes that move into the mainstream of software. Right. What happens in some cases is some really cool open source like the Linux operating system.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Linux operating system gathers steam because it fulfills a particular need for the technology people that build it. And then as it gets bigger and bigger, the Linux operating system now all of a sudden, you know, you wrap a banner around it, you put a user guide on it and an 800 number, you rename it Red Hat, and now an enterprise can buy it. Right? So this is kind of like an honest path
okay,
to
cool.
revenue for something that is an open source project or for any kind of a software tool. Sorry, Chris, didn't mean to interrupt.
Correct. But when it comes to this stuff, that's free. We have to look at who is funding the project, because when we look at who is funding the project, we uncover what is the motive for the project's right. existence. Now, I personally have a problem with the fact that Peter Thiel is one of the primary funders of Brave. And why is that a problem because Peter Thiel is one of the worst offenders when it comes to online surveillance. He runs Palantir.
Now what's his background?
Peter Thiel runs Palantir, which is one of the primary government contractors for surveilling and keeping watch over citizens. So the U.S. government is one of the primary customers of Palantir. And basically, if the U.S. government wants to find out what its citizens are doing, you know, Peter Thiel and Palantir is the go-to guy. So that's the first problem I have with Peter Thiel. The second problem is he is also a board member and very, very early investor in Facebook.
Right.
Oh.
Yes. And as we all know, Facebook recently, just last year, paid $5 billion in FTC fines for privacy violations. Now, why are we trusting Brave to be the ultimate in privacy when, hey, Peter Thiel gets to call the shots,
which is the case, right? Now we're starting to hit it, right? Peter Thiel gives them money, and
exactly.
now they have to answer to Peter Thiel.
So yeah, so we got a convoluted way of making money through attention. We have an investor who is one of the worst offenders when it comes to privacy, and we have a browser that says it's the ultimate in privacy. What can ever go wrong? All right. So Mike, In the Gizmodo article here, why don't you tell us a little bit about how they got in trouble?
Well, basically, it's quite funny, hey? I mean, it's you know, what they're talking about is that basically Brave was taking, in a browser that is supposed to be completely private and not doing any tracking or any of this kind of stuff, right, so that you could feel secure using it, people were actually noticing that when they were typing in URLs, like to do a search, if you look close enough, you saw that the URL was being changed and redirected to an affiliate website. So the idea was, is what Brave was actually doing was you were typing something in, let's say you were typing in Bitcoin, And what it would do is it would send you to a known affiliate of Brave's website for information on Bitcoin, which means, guess what? They're targeting your search, right? And they're sending it to a known affiliate where they get a cut because they sent you there.
Mm.
And then I thought this was astronomically bad until Chris told me about it, something even more egregious just this afternoon. Chris, talk about Brave and advertising.
So one of the things that makes Brave different is that Brave by default turns off ads. Okay. So while in most web browsers like Firefox and Chrome, you have to download ad block.
Right.
Allow it, right? Brave turns all of this off intentionally. Okay. And
sounds like a good thing, right?
Yeah, sounds like a good thing until you realize that a lot of these advertisements are replaced by Brave Zone advertisements. So
wait a second. Explain that to me.
So you go to somebody's website, right? You know, a mom and pop website. Hey, they're just a mommy blogger. They support themselves through ads. On Brave, you don't see these ads. At least not the ads that are pushed through the blogger. Instead, you see Brave's ads. Brave replaces. Yep, Brave replaces.
Shocking.
Website ads with their own ads, and the way they justify this is by saying that 80% of the revenue from those ads goes back to web browsers, like people who browse through Brave.
Wait a second.
That's how they justify it. They say, hey, you get a cut.
Wait a second. So what you're telling me is they come out and they launch something saying, we're just going to be completely, you know, private ad blocking, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to reward people for the amount of time they spend on the browser. And then what they're really doing on the back end is making tweaks in what they do so that they're basically driving revenue that you would have driven anyway. Because the reality is the mommy blogger's ads on her blog are what she makes money off of. And if people view if people view her blog through the Brave browser, which she has no control over, she makes zero money off of that ad.
Yeah, pretty much.
And Brave makes the money and just pays it back to the people on the platform.
Ideally, but there's also controversies with that, because a lot of folks, such as YouTube creators, say they haven't been compensated.
Wow!
Right? They haven't been compensated.
Right.
So you got this convoluted system that is all about your attention and monetizing your attention. They do it through tokens.
Right.
Right. Sounds all very convoluted, but basically the way I would describe this whole thing is how private can your web browser actually be when its other contradictory mission is to monetize your attention?
Right.
Whose attention? How does Brave know who is paying attention? Right.
So basically what you're saying is this is pretty much could potentially be coined as the Thiel effect, you know, where you clear, like, no, but let's think about it. Hey, I mean, you know, one of the things that's clearly a challenge, right, for any company that, like, you know, we've all gotten used to this idea that everything's free, right? If your app isn't free in the app store, nobody's going to download it. Nobody's going to use it. And so the contradiction there is that, you know, Facebook's free. And back in the days, before they had the timeline and all these other things, Facebook was, you know, basically a scrapbook that people shared too much personal information with, but they didn't really have a way to make any money off it. And then bingo, all of a sudden the newsfeed shows up and ads start popping in. And algorithms start controlling where the traffic goes. It sounds almost identical to Brave. The only difference is, you know, Facebook was meant to be kind of a bigger, you know, kind of an alternative to MySpace and a bunch of those other kind of community apps that existed at the time. And then all of a sudden, bang, mm-hmm. they turn into this, you know, kind of all-encompassing vacuum of misinformation and advertising, right? Because an investor who now controls the purse strings and the people who program the code, in this case, Peter Thiel, says it's time for you to make some money, right? Because I want to make some money on my investment. And maybe this is the same thing that's happened with Brave. I mean, it's quite likely right. It's the same thing that's happened with Brave.
Okay, so guys, they've been exposed. What has been the fallout? And or is it too
early?
Well,
there definitely has been fallout.
And what do you think the fallout's going to be?
One of the nice things about Brave being based upon open source software is that there is now a fork of Brave called Braver.
Ah, that's great.
So what's that?
Braver is the version of Brave that removes all referral codes, attention token integration, and various adware.
So basically gets okay. rid of removes the Thiel effect.
Oh.
Removes it. Exactly. So in this version, Braver, there's no more adware. Nobody is trying to monetize your attention
the way it should be.
And guess what? If you do a search for Bitcoin, you won't, your browser won't input a referral code. Right. Which means they're not going to make money off you that way.
Right. And so basically the idea is, if we want to distill this whole thing down, I mean, we're kind of the, you know, people's heads should be going something with this. It sounds innocuous, things like this, but what this is to me an indication that, you know, people need and are demanding now more honesty and transparency in everything. Up to right down to the business model level, right? I mean, I don't think it was Tim Cook that actually coined the phrase, but I mean, Tim Cook got a lot of credo for the phrase, if the product is free, you're the product.
There you go.
And I think that is now, you know, kind of the thing that I think is going through most people's heads, or should be going through most people's heads, when they are doing what lots of people are doing right now, guys, is they're looking for browsers that'll protect their privacy. And messaging systems that'll protect their privacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, other applications that they use on a day-to-day basis that will keep their privacy and allow them to do things like organize for protests or things like this. Right. And when you're out looking for these things and that service is free, you've got to look for the hook. There's got to be something there now or in the very near future that could change what you're doing.
Right.
You know, and so if you start to think, I mean, remember, guys, we've used this article or this kind of analogy before, but, you know, back in the early days, Napster mm-hmm. and all of these BitTorrent-based music and file sharing services, right, where basically you could download all these songs and things for free. And you know, you start to realize that somebody's not making money off it, right? The music industry wasn't making money off it. Napster got sued out of existence, right? All of these things. And what does Apple do? Jobs turns around and says, we're going to create this thing called iTunes. We're going to charge everybody $1 a song.
Yeah.
And I remember that they got laughed off the planet when they came out with that, right? Laughed off the planet. Why would I pay for whatever I can get for free if I just go on to BitTorrent?
Yep.
And, you know, look, you flash forward now, they basically are a platform. Everybody pays for these things because, you know, right now we're in a different world where lots of people, you know what? They want to acknowledge people who create content and they want to make sure that people get their fair share of revenues, like the mommy blogger, right? She should get her revenue if she's going to spend her time writing up a blog that helps other moms with issues, things like this.
Absolutely.
And the challenge is what do you do when you build your revenue stream on a platform that betrays you?
Well said.
Exactly, Mike. I think the other reality is you have to be transparent about how you make money.
Absolutely.
One of Brave's problems was that the way they purportedly made money is, it wasn't transparent. It was very convoluted.
Right.
How am I supposed to know what a basic attention token is?
Right. Right.
How am I supposed to know what that's worth? How do you convert something as amorphous as attention into real tangible currency?
By referring people to advertisers. That's how you do it, right?
You know.
Clearly, which is what they had behind their intention all along.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly, You can measure things like time on site. You can measure things like click through, all that other stuff. That's tangible. What's not tangible is something like attention.
Right. Yes.
Right.
You know, the online world has got to get more like the physical world. In other words, if I want a product or service, I go out and I buy it, and I pay for it. Online, it's nebulous. If I don't pay for it, then yeah, how do they make money, and what are they getting from me?
Right. No, I think Henry, you've basically kind of come to a, you know, that I think this is the concluding point, right? I think the idea simply is that what this has, this attention to something like Brave has done is that we're focusing on Brave, and there's lots of other applications out there that are like this, and there will be lots more, right? But the reality is I think what we're seeing is potentially kind of a seismic shift in just the day-to-day viewpoint of applications on the internet. You know, I think you're going to find that more and more people are going to be looking at applications that are free and wondering what the catch is. In fact, anticipating the catch.
Ah.
You know, there's got to be something, right? If you go to the car dealership and they give you the car for free, or your grocery store gives you your groceries for free, you know something's going to happen.
Isn't that interesting? You're absolutely right. When it happens in real life, your spidey sense says, wait a second, what's going on? But when it happens online...
Right? Well, look...
Yeah, y'all, yeah,
my
exactly.
grandfather used, my dad, everybody, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? But in the internet, it's been, there's no such thing as a paid for app. It makes no sense. So basically, human nature and common sense will tell you that if you're not going to pay for it, if you're not paying for it, if the person says this car and you look at the lot and it says free on all the windows, you know there's something wrong. Okay?
There's no engine.
Well, it doesn't matter. It says it's free. Like something's going to happen. Okay. And I think that what you need to do now is if you have good people programming good technology or building a good product, okay, and your product has a market, then I think you have to be honest with people that hey, it costs money to make this app or this loaf of bread or this car. And somebody has to pay the salaries of the people that do it.
Yeah.
And if you're not honest and transparent at the outset, when you first go to the app store and download the app and you look at this thing and you're like, it's free, there's something wrong. Okay. And if they say, you know what, I don't need a lot of money, I need a dollar or whatever the number is, you need to evaluate it based on the service that you're using it for. And if you're building your mommy blog on a blogging platform that actually costs you to buy it, that means that you're paying for that thing to deliver the service that it says on the tin.
Yes, and you've defined that value is worth paying for. It's classic. It's nothing new. It's just basic economy.
Basic economy.
I think the good news is that I believe that the Braves of this world are not long for this world. I think that their time in the sun is coming to an end. I think people are investing more and more in software as a service. People are willing to pay for Netflix. They're willing to pay for Microsoft Office 365. It's only a matter of time in which, you know, hey, what's the price of privacy? A little bit of money.
Well said, Chris. Both of you, Mike, Chris, very good insights. And I think the conclusion is just be transparent. And you'll be successful. Thank you, boys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Henry.